Roundhouse Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWP Radio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vapidez.
It's TLD.
Yeah.
Four-time tag team champion. I'm curvy. I'm cute. I'm a champion.
Folks, it's phenomenal what I do. You get to lay on TLD.
Why everything, Dennis? I'm TLD.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Show. We are hashtag PWP Radio. We are live tonight right after WWE TLC pay-per-view that was just on the air from Houston, Texas. We have now closed the chapter. There is a new WWE World Heavyweight Champion. We will get to all those results tonight and talk about it. But first, we are... For the first time, if you're listening to this show, we are ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. We are an article and news-based website talking about as much as we can the positivity here in pro wrestling and to talk about news, rumors, and have amazing guests. Guys like Jake the Snake Roberts, who was on last week. Guys like John Morrison. Women like Maria Kanellis. We've had many interviews. You can check out all of our episodes right here at blogtalkradio.com. We are also featured on iTunes. We are featured on YouTube. We have video interviews with the Hurricane Shane Helms, John Morrison, and many others, Ted DiBiase, many people, and we are just a one heck of a fun-loving group to talk to. We are going to have 1 hour tonight to talk about WTLC, and I'm going to bring in my usual co-host, as always, for these pay-per-view wrap-ups we do every Sunday night, and that is Mr. Toph. Mr. Toph, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Hope everybody's having good holidays and, you know, hope everyone's done with their exams and all that and just generally hope everybody had a good Sunday and all that good stuff.
Yes, good Sundays. I would like to personally point out that my sister did graduate with her occupational therapy master's degree. I'm very proud of her. Just wanted to bring that up. But I'm sure there are many others out there like today who graduated, and congrats to all those hoping to get jobs. And jobs are very important in this world, Toph.
Yeah, they are. Unless you're Zack Ryder or Dolph Ziggler. You job every day.
Yes.
But yeah.
Well, that was a good one, Toph. let's move forward. We actually have a caller on the line. We're going to take this call right now so they can join us in our conversation. This is the 417 area code. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. It's Greg calling from Joplin, Missouri.
Greg, thank you for joining us on the show. Is this your first time calling in?
First time calling in, guys. Glad to be on the show.
No, thank you, Greg. Thank
hey, welcome,
for
Greg.
To the show. We are always happy to warm the audience to come into the show. Our number to call is 760-888-5749. You can call into the show. We will bring you on the air to discuss this show. So let's get started right away. We will talk about the show that everyone could have watched, which was on YouTube. That's right. We always had those YouTube episodes. Greg, since we never got your opinion, since your first time on the show, what's your thoughts on the YouTube idea of them doing it? What do you think? Do you think it works? Do you think people will tune into it? What's your thoughts on it?
I think it's a great idea, guys. I mean, it gives everybody a chance to kind of engage, leave comments, check out kind of real-time what's going on. I'm a big fan of the YouTube show. I think it's probably, you know, the best way to interact with your fans and audience. I really am a big fan of it.
Well, there you go, a positive remark. I mean, we always remember those pre-pay-per-views of Sunday Night Heats, and they've kind of brought that to the YouTube channel, which I like, and I do like the panel idea. I think it really works, so thanks for your opinion on that. Fandango versus Summer Rae, not versus Summer Rae, Fandango was with Summer Rae to take on Dolph Ziggler, Toph. Well, we just talked about jobs, but what were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, man, kind of a scratch-in-your-head moment, like, what did Dolph Ziggler do? I mean, last year around this time, he main evented TLC last year, and now he's in a pre-show match.
Yes, he did.
Wow. Oh, but this match was fine. You know, it wasn't like Fandango beat him straight up. You know, there was some interference from Summer Rae. You know, I respect Johnny Curtis. You know, not my favorite wrestler, but you know, let's just be honest here. You know, I wouldn't say his character's a bust, but he's not really over that much. I think whenever they are having an international crowd, it seems like those UK fans really like Fandango, but over here in the States, he just gets kind of mediocre reactions, and I just don't think that him beating Dolph Ziggler in the pre-show accomplishes anything. You know, great work, good match. I don't have anything bad to say about the match itself. Just, you know, just kind of unfortunate. You know, they're pushing Fandango again. I don't think the majority care. And Ziggler's talents are just being wasted in pre-show matches. So just kind of one of those head-scratchers.
All right, Greg, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, to me it's just insane that you can just schedule in a kind of, like, I don't know, kind of a unmarketed fan, like an unmarketed match with The Miz and Kofi, and then throw in this Brodus Clay, Kenzai, sort of R-Truth debacle in a pay-per-view and leave two of probably the top 10 workers in the business off the show, put them on the pre-show. It just kind of blows my mind. I mean, the amount of heat, the amount of push that Ziggler has lost from the cash-in last year for WrestleMania to today is just kind of mind-blowing. I mean, I don't know what the guy has done to really cause waves in the back office of WWE, but obviously he has fallen down the totem pole in a way that I never could imagine.
Well, you know, we have to see. I do agree with a lot of those comments. I don't know what Dolph Ziggler's current situation is. And it's going to be even harder now that we don't have a world heavyweight title anymore. Now that we have one single belt, more belts are decreasing, and that's been happening over time in the WWE. So it's going to be even harder. I mean, I think Dolph Ziggler is the kind of guy that needs to have a championship, at least in my opinion. I think he needs to have something. So we'll see what goes on further down the road. But let's talk about the first match that opened up the show, which was one of those three-on-one handicap matches, CM Punk against The Shield. And CM Punk defeats The Shield in a pretty good opening match, but we're starting to see that dysfunction group of The Shield starting to crack. Toph, your thoughts on the match, and where do you think The Shield's going to go from here?
Oh, it's over. I called this months ago. I told you it was only a matter of time before Roman Reigns accidentally speared Dean Ambrose, and that's exactly what happened. So the seeds were already planted, you know, the first root sprouted tonight. So, yeah, we're going to see. The official breakup is going to be at the Rumble. I already know exactly what's going to happen. More than likely, they'll have Orton or Triple H will probably tell The Shield to enter the Rumble and have them eliminate to give Orton a better chance, and, you know, this will have Reigns just go in for himself, and he'll eliminate Ambrose, and, you know, he'll start his babyface push here. I thought the match was good. It was realistic, you know, because CM Punk is a kind of a small guy, so to have him beat three guys by himself would be unrealistic and unbelievable. So they had Roman Reigns, you know, do the little spear thing where he hurt his eye, making it two-on-one, and then Punk sort of outsmarted Ambrose, which led to Reigns spearing him. So this was a believable victory. It wasn't like Punk just went in there and, you know, hulked up and beat all three of them by himself. It was more of a, you know, the Shield, their chemistry was off and Punk outsmarted them. So this was a good opener, and this was a good match. But yeah, the seeds for the Shield breaking up have been planted, and they'll be breaking up at the Rumble, calling it now.
Greg, do you think that if using the psychology of pro wrestling, looking at it in that way where he had to go against three guys. He had to take them out one by one, or in this case, he took out the eye of Roman Reigns, which also could help what happened. I mean, psychology-wise, do you think the match was pretty good for that reason, or were you entertained by the wrestling part? What were your thoughts on that match?
You know, I've gone back and forth on this one. I really think this might have been my favorite match of the night. I thought the wrestling was really, really good. Obviously, anytime you get guys like worker match like CM Punk and Rollins and, you know, actually, all the guys in the show are just awesome. But, I really like the match. I totally agree. I think the Rumble's the time you see the Shield faction break down. They've had a hell of a run this year, obviously. I thought the match was really good. I mean, comparing this match to the other three-on-one handicap match, I mean, I enjoyed this match way more than I did the Wyatt-Bryan Danielson match, for sure. You know, I think that like, it plays out. I mean, the Royal Rumble could have some, I mean, you could see some really, really cool twists and turns, like was previously said with the other guys getting eliminated and Reigns just taking over. But, you know, overall, I really liked the match. I wasn't too surprised. I kind of saw it coming a little bit with all the arguing that's been happening, you know, with the Shield members on all the promos that have been shooting. But I thought Punk looked good in this match. I thought it was well done. I think it sets it up really nice for whatever they want to do with the Shield moving forward.
Well, I definitely predicted this match to be CM Punk's match, and he did win. I thought it was a very good opener. I think I'm glad they did open up with one of the handicap matches. They had to spread that out. Having two back-to-back or having them too close was going to be kind of a problem. But I'm glad they went that route with opening it with that one because I pretty much knew CM Punk was going to win that. Moving forward, we had AJ Lee against Natalya. Now, a lot of people were going into the show thinking about what happened with the internet marks. Again, we're all over AJ having a problem with one of the NBC sports producers or talk show hosts. Greg, did you hear about that?
Yeah, I saw some tweets online earlier from the MSNBC crew saying about girlfriend neutering or something crazy like that. So I don't know, man. AJ, to me, it seems like AJ has a really hard problem differentiating AJ the person from AJ the character. So I don't know if that's going to carry on and cause her problems moving forward. You know, she did the little Total Divas pipe bomb a couple weeks ago that I thought went over really well. So I don't know if WWE penalizes her for that or if they kind of build upon it. I mean, it's really their call. She's definitely gaining notoriety outside of Total Divas, which I see as kind of a positive.
Well, you know, I think maybe they should just put her in the series. I don't think they will. But, you know, I mean, as far as the match goes, though, what are your thoughts on that match with Natalya? I mean, actually, I thought it was a pretty good Divas match from what we usually see. But what were your thoughts on it?
I mean, I liked the match a lot. That was good. I think that there's been a lot of Divas matches on pay-per-views the last few months have been pretty sort of fill-in, lackluster, let's build for a reality show, TV storylines. But I thought the match was pretty good. I mean, it's kind of funny. I was talking to a couple of my buddies that work indie matches around here, and we were watching the pay-per-view together, and they kept going back to, if you guys remember this, Taryn Terrell Gail Kim match that was at some random TNA pay-per-view a couple of months ago,
and how
that kind of brought the house down. And you know, as far as the Divas, you know, women's wrestling, I mean, I kind of always go back to that match in 2013 saying, is there another match that's as good as that or has the intensity level as that one? And while this was a great match, I just think that WWE is, If there's one area they're lacking in, it's building the sort of spots and great matches that TNA girls have been putting on in the last, you know, 6 to 12 months.
Well, I'm sure Toph would agree with that. He's a big TNA fan, definitely a knockout fan. Toph, I mean, for WWE standard, I thought this match was actually pretty good for, like I said, WWE standard. Even not bad for a wrestling standard because those two women can go. But what are your thoughts, Toph?
This match is okay. I'm not really a fan of the Divas division or AJ Lee in general, so I won't go into my rant on that, but this was an okay match.
Okay, you see, Tobe is a man short of words, just on how he just has no words to talk about how great that match was. So let's move forward to the Intercontinental title match, which was Big E Langston against Damian Sandow. Now, one thing we weren't able to discuss on the show was the Intercontinental title has now become that second-tier title again, as it has been in the past. If you remember, the Intercontinental title was always preceding to that WWE title, and it's now regained, at least in my opinion, that aspect of it. But that belt's got to be built up pretty high because now Big E Langston's level, he's the number two guy, if you want to think about it, as champions in the company. Greg, your thoughts on the match itself and what they need to do the Intercontinental title to get that back up to that level again?
Man, that's a great question. I appreciate you guys leaving me on the show, too. I mean, you guys have great commentary on all these matches, and I always enjoy what you guys put out. But, you know, this match didn't really do a lot for me. I was expecting quite a bit more. I think Sandow's going to have a great 2014. I think Biggie Langston's probably got a lot of fans in the locker room that really like him from what I've heard. But I wasn't really blown away by this match. I thought the outcome was probably the most predictable of the whole card. I don't know. I mean, with Big E in the driver's seat of the with the IC title, I don't know how big you can make that belt in the next couple months with him. Obviously, going to WrestleMania season, I would like to see the Intercontinental belt have a little more, you know, a little more merit and a little more, you know, kind of wow factor around it. But with Curtis Axel not doing a whole lot with it, and then Big E Langston now taking it and not doing a whole lot on the mic, I'm not sure, guys. I don't know what they can do to give that belt significance or to make Big E, you know, a star having that belt around him.
Toph, since you, like, pretty much are a writer for WWE here, pretty much predicting where they're going to go with it, where do you see the Intercontinental title going? I mean, to me, I kind of agree with Greg. I really didn't care for the match. It was pretty obvious what was going to happen. The fans, even at the crowd, which I'm going to get to probably after this match. What are your I'm sure the match wasn't that great, but what are your thoughts on how the Intercontinental title could really be built up to the next level, being underneath the WWE title, and how we can build those stars back up?
Well, two things. I actually thought this match was okay. I was very impressed by Big E.
Oh,
I think he's
what?
A great
what
wrestler.
Was that? My ear set went out. What was that again?
I liked the match.
Okay.
I thought it was
sorry.
A good match.
Go ahead,
I liked how Big E and Damien were basically trying to hit their finishers the whole match. That was how, because in the opening sequence, Big E was going for the big ending and Damien was going for the you welcome. So, like, the whole match was just them trying to see who can get their finisher first. It kind of reminded me when you're playing a video game with a friend, when, you know, in video games you can just use your special, like, 30 seconds into the match. Anyway, as far as the Intercontinental Championship, I can tell you how to bring it back. I've been saying this for a while now, and a lot of people, they dislike me. It's the Money in the Bank. The Money in the Bank, it killed the mid-card. I'll tell you, man, like, look at the early WrestleManias. Look at WrestleMania 10. Look at WrestleMania 14. Look at WrestleMania 17. Look at those. Look at the preteen WrestleManias. Look at the later adolescent WrestleManias. There were always, like, strong, solid mid-card championship feuds for the Intercontinental title and for the European title. But when they introduced the Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 21, and instead of building up those mid-card titles, what they did was they just put every solid mid-carder that was decent at the time, and they just put them in a Money in the Bank match. They did that from WrestleMania 21 to, like, 26. And so then when they finally took away Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 27, it felt like WrestleMania was missing something because WWE, they forgot how to build a decent mid-card. They've relied too much on Money in the Bank. And since they've unified the world titles now, this means that there's only going to be one Money in the Bank instead of two, which means that there's only going to be one Royal Rumble winner, or there's always been one, but you'll only be able to challenge for one title and not two, which means that the Elimination Chamber and basically every gimmick pay-per-view, now they're forced to do more of the mid-card. Because there were so many options, because there was a World Heavyweight Championship, because there were two Money in the Banks, you know, there were always They forgot how to build a mid-card is what I'm trying to say. You know, they always would just give the mid-card guys what was left. But now that all these secondary options are gone, WWE will have no choice but to build their mid-card. I'm very confident that eventually the U.S. title and the Intercontinental title will also be merged. Because it's kind of tacky now, because you just have one tag team title, you have one world champion, you have one Divas champion. Why do you need two mid-card belts? I don't know when it's going to happen, but I'm very, very confident that the U.S. title and the IC title will be merged at some point, which would be for the best, because if you win the U.S. title, you don't win a triple crown anyway, which is stupid. You should, but WWE logic, you know, what can you do there?
Well, you know, it's funny how you mentioned that the finishers they were going for, because I did notice that myself, and you brought up a good point about that. But, you know, right now mid-card titles, I think they need to kind of reintroduce them, get people familiar with what those belts mean. And by right now they have a lot of mid-card level guys, and they need to try to build them up. And I think right now they need those two titles just for the reason of trying to build them up. But one thing I wanted to mention was not only – I don't think a lot of the matches were that bad, but I think the crowd was horrible in Houston. I really didn't think they were – interested in the show at all. at least throughout most of the night. I mean, Greg, I don't know if you got that vibe. That's the vibe I got from that.
I totally agree with you. I thought the Houston crowd was horrible tonight. I thought they took a lot away from the match, a lot of the matches. I thought most of the matches, you know, wrestling-wise, were pretty good. I thought the Houston crowd was like, I don't know if it just seemed like a very sort of very casual WWE crowd where they didn't really realize the significance of you know, what the matches meant or appreciate, you know, kind of spots the guys were doing. I mean, it's just the polar opposite of having an event in Chicago or Philly or New York or Minneapolis or somewhere like that. I think tonight was a decent pay-per-view. I mean, really, you look at the middle of the year from Money in the Bank all the way up till who knows what, maybe this event itself. I mean, there's been some pretty bad pay-per-views, and the crowd's been pretty hot on them, but tonight's was a letdown. I think that if you had a better crowd tonight in Houston, man, maybe not ever do an event again this big in Houston. If you'd had this event in St. Louis or something, I think it would have been would have come off totally separate on totally different than it did on TV. I totally agree with you guys. I think that the crowd tonight just kind of killed a lot of the momentum that could have been built from this.
Yeah, I mean, an audience is a big thing. You know, if the audience is not strong, what makes them want to go back to Houston, Texas, and do a pay-per-view there? Your thoughts on the crowd?
They had every right to be bored because the show was boring. They didn't get anything to cheer. You know, the biggest thing about this card that annoyed me was the wrestling, and all these matches were fine. But this is a TLC show, and 2 hours through the show, there wasn't a single table, ladder, or chair used. You had an impromptu no-DQ match with no weapons. A no-DQ match with no weapons. Let that sink in. That makes no sense. TLC has always been one of my favorite pay-per-views of the year. They always improvise and they use different gimmicks. They have chair matches. I remember when Big Show and Sheamus, I thought that was going to be like a crappy match, but it was actually pretty fun with chairs. I remember the TLC six-man tag match from last year with Team Hell No, Ryback, and The Shield. I remember when Christian and Shelton had a great ladder match for the ECW title, like in the first TLC pay-per-view. I remember there was like a triangle ladder match a few years back. I think it was Ziggler, Swagger, and some other third person I can't recall. TLC, they've always had like different gimmicks to entertain the crowd, and this year it was just nothing. It was just regular, solid matches, which is great, but you're advertising it as tables, ladders, and chairs, yet you only have one match, this TLC. And I'm noticing that WWE, they're doing this with their gimmick pay-per-views. They only have, like, one or two Hell in a Cell matches. Or earlier this year, they have a pay-per-view called Elimination Chamber when there's only actually one match. I feel like if WWE is not going to take these gimmicks seriously anymore, then they should just drop these gimmick pay-per-views and just go back to the old-fashioned days where you just make up stuff like No Mercy or Unforgiven. Just bring those back. But I don't blame this crowd for being bored. I mean, why should they react to Kofi Kingston versus The Miz? We see that on Raw and SmackDown every week. Why should we react to a Brodus Clay heel turn that no one cares about? Why should they react to AJ Lee versus Natalya when you know AJ's going to win? Why should they react to that? Why should they react to John Cena versus Randy Orton when no one cares who wins and they just want to see Daniel Bryan? I don't blame this crowd for being bad. It wasn't a bad show. The wrestling was great, but it was boring.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people would say it was a little predictable also on – I mean, it's pretty much, I think, what we predicted that night on Tuesday night's show, which we have every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. We pretty much filled up that entire show the way it was going to go down. And that could be a reason, too. But, you know, like I said, the wrestling was good. I mean, if the wrestling's good enough, I would think the fans would at least have some kind of investment. But we'll get to that because there were some matches they were invested in. And this next one was definitely one of them. The four-way tag team elimination match, by the way, which I had no idea was an elimination match until the match actually happened. Cody Rhodes, Goldust, Ryback, Curtis Axel, Big Show, Rey Mysterio, and the Real Americans. This was a really great tag team match. You know, again, this tag team division, if you had to say the number two title now in the WWE, I would put the tag team titles as the number two titles to grab right now because they're that good, they're that strong, and they're always having the best matches. Toph, your thought on the tag team match?
Yeah, this is a good match. If 2013's proven anything, it's proven that tag team wrestling is still over and that fans still invest in it. Fans still react very positively to tag team wrestling, not just in WWE, but in other companies as well. Every single time tag team wrestling gets a main spotlight, fans love it. I remember earlier this year at Bound for Glory when the Bromans, when they won, like at first it was a joke, but the match was actually good and the fans were into it. And the same can be said about Goldust and Cody, the Usos, the Shield, the Real Americans. Tag team wrestling is alive and well. So hopefully this continues next year. This match was good. I was a little disappointed the Usos weren't in it. I don't really think Ryback and Curtis Axel were necessary, but there always has to be, you know, that one throwaway team. Yeah, this was a sort of a botch because they said it was a fatal four-way elimination match, which is a contradiction because in a fatal four-way, it just goes to one pin. So this was really, you could say, a four corners kind of elimination match, but WWE doesn't really use old-school tactics like that. I really enjoyed the sequence of counters that Cody and Ray did at the end where, you know, Cody went for the crossroads, but then Ray countered that into a Hurricanrana, went for the 619, and Cody countered that into an Alabama Slam, and then Rey Mysterio countered that. Cody and Ray always have good matches. I enjoyed their feud in 2011, which in my opinion was still Cody's best work. That whole, you know, deranged Cody when he had the mask, that was still his best work. But yeah, this was a good match. You know, congrats to Goldust. He's in great shape, and hopefully this continues into next year. You know, I would love to see a big tag team program at WrestleMania next year. Definitely deserves it. This was a good match. Match of the night for me. So,
you know, I actually agree with you. I thought this was also a match of the night candidate for me. And I got to tell you, these tag team matches have always been a match of the night. And this was just another one. I think these teams just are hitting their stride. You know, like I said, I consider them the number two titles in the WWE right now because of the action. I thought Ryback and Curtis Axel could be a good team, but Heyman's not with them. And if Heyman was with them, I think it would be a little bit better. I was very happy with the way the Big Show and Rey Mysterio team was. They're just a respectable kind of team, you know, letting Goldust get back to the feet, have a real match with them, shaking their hands at the end. Shows that, you know, good, solid, respect, which I think the fans would like. And Cody Rhodes and Goldust have earned it, especially the way Goldust and Cody Rhodes are working so well together, and Goldust is coming back to the WWE. Greg, your thoughts on this match?
I totally agree with you guys. I love the match. That match was fantastic. I'm just more and more a fan every time I see the Real Americans wrestle together, how good they are. Their chemistry is amazing. I'm not even dependent on the Zip Coulter funny commentary anymore. I think these guys are just fantastic in the ring together. Obviously, Dustin, Goldust and Cody really have just put on some awesome matches lately. I kind of agree with the earlier comment that having Big Show and Ray instead of the Usos, you know, as far as his name value goes, I mean, it's a bigger draw, but, I mean, the Usos make total sense to put in this match. I would have put them in this match, and I think the match probably would have been better. That being said, I think it's a great match. Yeah, I'm happy with the outcome. Like I said, I'm sort of a mark for the Real Americans, but you know, I thought this was a fantastic match. And like you said, every time that Cody and Goldust have been in a pay-per-view match recently, it's just been awesome. So, you know, another really, really nice match on this card, and I don't think anybody can complain about the direction that the tag team division has been in the last few months.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of my earliest memories. Oh, I'm sorry.
I
was going to say one of my earliest memories of wrestling was watching a sequence of matches between Harlem Heat and the Steiner Brothers and WCW. Mm. And those matches was great. It's always great when you have like two legit brother tag teams. Like, there's nothing wrong with being, you know, kayfabe brothers, but when you have two legit kayfabe tag teams that are brothers, the chemistry is so great, and I could easily see the Usos and Cody and Goldust having, you know, a series of great matches, and you know, I hope they pull the trigger. You know, it would be unusual for WWE because we don't usually get face versus face, especially in tag teams, but I think it would be great.
It would be.
Well, I'm looking forward to the tag team division in 2014. I have to say, I think they're pretty cool. It's been a great year for tag team wrestling. The Shield, I think, was the catalyst to bring this in. I would say Team Hell No also. I think Team Hell No, honestly, for me, was
right.
The catalyst to bring the tag team division back because you brought two single guys together and you bring them together and put on a comedy and a great tag team. And, you know, it just launched the career again of Daniel Bryan, but also launched the tag team division, which I'm very happy they're moving forward with. And they're going to start pushing some more teams down our throat, which is all good for me. Moving forward to the next match, which was a surprise match. We didn't know this was happening. R-Truth with Xavier Woods against Brodus Clay with the Funadactyls. And R-Truth wins, but again, Brodus Clay is starting to lose his Funkadactyl on the back of his butt, I guess, because he's starting to get a little pissy with Tensai and Cameron and Naomi, and we don't know what's going on there. But R-Truth wins, but where's Brodus Clay going? I mean, Topo already kind of explained, I guess, where no one's going to care about it. I think people are going to somewhat care about it because Brodus Clay was a fun character, and the Funkadactyls are now going to have to probably go on their own, but they have. They told Divas Show with them. Didn't really think much of the match, but, you know, obviously I like where Brodus Clay is going as a heel. Your thoughts, Greg, on this one?
I mean, the match to me was kind of a throwaway match. It's kind of like what you see on SmackDown. I don't know how long the match was, 6 or 7 minutes or something. But, you know, it kind of completes the Brodus Clay heel turn, which is fine. And it's kind of funny how Brodus Clay, on that little soundbite, said, you know, I'm ready for the main event. And I think he is ready for the main event. Unfortunately, that comes on Wednesday night. So, you know, I don't think much is going to change there. But I don't know what they can do with him. I mean, every time I take Brodus Clay and I think Brodus Clay potential, I always flip back to when you know, CM Punk sort of pipe bomb saying, Brodus Clay, you got a 400-pound monster shucking and jiving out here or whatever. And, you know, it's like Brodus Clay's a big dude. He's a freaky-looking guy. I've never been blown away. I mean, never even been mildly blown away by his wrestling ability. So, to be honest with you guys, I just don't know. I don't know what you can do with Brodus Clay. I don't know how the crowds can react to him. He's just a kind of a mystery going into the new year for me. I'd be really, you know, I'm really anxious to hear what you guys think is, you know, the WWE's direction with Brodus next 6-12 months.
I think my opinion of that is, I know it would be a weird thing, but I think it would get him a lot of heat. He's got to take out one of the Funkadactyl girls. I think if he does, like, a big splash on one of them, that is a way to get really true heat and to get the fans to really not like him. I know that's something that seems like a little weird to do, but there was times in wrestling where women would get beat up by men, and it's a great way to get people to hate someone. I think, to me, that'd be the best way to do it. Toph, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I agree. I remember when they turned Stone Cold heel back at 2001 after WrestleMania, it was really difficult because Stone Cold was Stone Cold and the fans were still cheering him. And so, you know, the creative team was scratching their heads wondering, you know, what can we do to get the fans to boo Stone Cold? And when they had that two-man power trip, I remember vividly one of the scariest memories ever. My mom actually banned me from watching wrestling for like 3 months. I remember Triple H and Stone Cold fought the Hardys, and Lita was, like, trying to help him, and Stone Cold was literally beating Lita up with a chair. You guys remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that was like a man-on-female violence. My mom was just horrified at that, and that gave Stone Cold legit heat. So, but Brodus, he actually can cut good promos. I don't know if you guys seen this, but, like, on one of the older NXT seasons when he got eliminated, he actually cut a promo where he basically said that, you know, you fans took away my dream, and now I'm going to take away your dream, or something like that. The way he cut the promo, it was kind of like in a Martin Luther King pastor-like sort of vibe. I'll find it and post it on the page. It was a really good promo, but he cut it after he was eliminated, and fans are booing him, and it looked like it was going to lead to something. Then he just sort of vanished on TV, and then when you saw him again, he was in a dancing gimmick, so... You know, as far as the match itself goes, it was okay. It was kind of filler just to kill time. It could have been like on Raw or SmackDown. But it served its purpose, and it completed the Brodus Clay heel turn. So the Funkadactyls will be okay. Where Tensai goes from here, I don't know. Actually, I do know where he can go. He can be a commentator because he's pretty good at that. So, yeah, that was fine.
Well, moving on, something that happened on our YouTube show was Kofi Kingston and The Miz Kofi basically came up and wanted to fight The Miz, and they basically made a match called a no disqualification match. Very odd, because there really wasn't anything they did to cause a disqualification other than being outside the ring longer than they normally would. So I don't really know. I was really happy with – I know they're trying to do everything they can to get this feud going. I mean, to me, there's something, but there's something missing, because they're taking the basic logic of two guys just don't like each other and they just want them to fight. But something just doesn't happen. Is it just that – are they just not clicking together? Or is it – I mean, the fans clearly are not really investing in it. And you brought up a good point, they're fighting every week, which I don't really mind. Because if they do different matches all the time, then it's okay. Because they've done matches where they did a best out of five series, and they've done something like that. But we don't even know who really the heel is in this situation, because they're both doing heel things. They're both doing face things. Toph, what do you think? Is it just that people aren't connecting with these two as a feud, or is it just they're not putting on good matches, or what is it? Because I'm trying to figure it out myself.
This is definitely, without a doubt, if you made a top 10 list of most unusual things in wrestling, Kofi and Miz is right up there. This is one of the strangest angles going anywhere in any company right now. You have Miz abandoning Kofi in a match, which just solidifies him as a heel. Then you have Miz fight Kofi the next week, offering a handshake like his Ring of Honor, and then Kofi loses, and then he slaps him, making Kofi look like a heel. And then Miz, you know, does all these appearances in the media, trashing Kofi Kingston, thus making himself the heel. But then Kofi talks crap on Twitter, saying a lot of offensive things like he's a heel, but then when he comes out, he's a face. Very, very strange. I'm not sure what they're trying to do here. I'm all for Kofi going heel, because he's actually been babyface for a very long time. He's been babyface since he debuted in ECW, like, whenever that was. I think it was like 07 or something. I don't know. But, yeah, man, this is a very strange feud. As far as why the fans are connecting with it, they're not connecting because they probably think that WWE is just not going to pull the trigger. It's pretty obvious that The Miz, at this point in his career, he's just nowhere near being a main event player. He's not connecting as well as he used to. And Kofi, he's just been in mid-card limbo forever, for what seems like since, like, 2009, ever since that feud with Orton, where he got buried, you know. It's like you want to invest in him, but you just know that the WWE is not going to pull the trigger, which makes the fans not care. And as you said before, it was a no DQ match, and they didn't do. There was no chairs, there was no tables. I mean, it's a TLC pay-per-view. Why would they react? Just very strange, you know. It's just, I don't know. I don't know what this feud is.
Greg, your thoughts?
I mean, I thought this was a good chance for the pay-per-view TLC to actually throw in some elements like tables or chairs or ladders. And, like, you know, none of those things happened. I think this match could have got over pretty well if they had used some objects in this match. But, you know, I have no idea what is with this feud. I think WWE botched it a little bit. They turned Miz heel too soon. They didn't realize that he had this ABC family Christmas show coming out or whatever. And then they kind of went back on that on Raw. They kind of made him a good guy again. You know, they're trying hard. There's a lot of backstory on this one. You think you could make a decent feud out of it, but, you know, for whatever reason, the crowd, really nobody cares about this feud at all. Neither guy are doing anything to really get over with the WWE audience. I don't know. You know, I don't know where you go from here. I would kill this thing right now if I was creative, because I just don't see how could go anybody, you know, how could get any bigger from here. You know, they did all they could with the airtime they give these guys, and you know, I think it's kind of dead in the water.
Well, you know, I'm a big Miz fan, and, you know, I just don't know what their ending goal of it is. You know, when you see someone like John Morrison, I remember John Morrison and R-Truth, and when they were a tag team for a long time, and then all of a sudden, you know, R-Truth won his match, and then John Morrison kind of fooled him to do a match, and then right away, right in the middle of that, that's when R-Truth just turned heel and lit a cigarette, and it was just really pretty. It was a really amazing heel turn that year in 2012, I believe it was. But then, you know, this one, I understand they're trying to do it as there is, I really don't know. I mean, I don't know what their ending game is. And again, it's, you're right about a lot of things, Toph, that they're trying to, you know, make Miz the heel, but in a lot of ways they're like saying, well, Kofi's got a new attitude or he's got some attitude. I really don't know where they're going with it. And I don't want to spend too much more time on it because we got two more matches to talk about, and that is the 3-on-1 handicap match. It was Daniel Bryan against the Wyatt family. Greg, your thoughts on the match itself. What were your thoughts going into it and what the outcome was?
Sure, guys. You talking about the Wyatt-Daniel Bryan match there?
Correct.
Yeah, did you guys talk about the Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan match there?
We didn't talk about it yet, but we that's why I'm going to you to hear your thoughts.
Okay, great. Yeah. I thought it was a little bit awkward how just in terms of size, I mean, Daniel Bryan is just such a small guy going against the Wyatts. And, you know, I thought it was weird how Bray Wyatt was sitting outside the ring. I mean, I kind of got it a little bit. And I actually thought the match was okay. I'm just not sure on where they go from here. I kind of like the idea of the Daniel Bryan going with the Wyatts. You know, just to be honest with you, I have no idea where this storyline goes.
Maybe there is nothing. I mean, simply he was put in this situation by Kane, and there was no way he was going. I mean, again, going back to CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, there should have been absolutely no way, positively, that they could have won this match. The Shield showed the signs of dissension, or this group did not. And, you know, and Wyatt, and these guys are just so new. With that group going away, probably the Shield, and this group sticking around, you have these unique guys. I don't know. I think they're trying to turn Daniel Bryan into a heel, which clearly won't happen. We don't know. There might be more to happen on this next episode of Raw. We have to watch the next couple of weeks. We have a long time until the Royal Rumble. We have 6 weeks, I think they said. So we got plenty of build-up to the Royal Rumble to see what they're going to do with it. Toph, your thoughts on the match itself and where Daniel Bryan goes from here or the Wyatts?
Yeah, this was definitely the weaker of the two handicap matches, namely because the Wyatt family, they're just not as good in the ring as the Shield are. I liked how Bray Wyatt was outside of the ring, and then halfway through the match, he got on the apron. So, you know, to remind you, this is a 3-on-1 match. As far as where it goes, you can say this for a lot of the feuds in WWE. Right now, WWE, at this point in time, it reminds me of WCW in late 98 going into 99 when the NWO stuff was just getting out of hand and all the focus was put on the NWO and the world title. But then all the other mid-card stuff, it was like, where does this go? Where does that go? Where is this going? That's just the feeling I get for WWE. Like, you look at the world title, or should I say the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, you look at that belt, and you have a pretty good idea where this is going. But then you look at all these other mid-card stuff and or upper mid-card stuff, and you're like, where does he go? Where does Ziggler go? Where does Bryan go? Where does Punk go? Like, I don't think they're really planning that. I think what they're doing is they're just giving these guys something to do to kill time to their big show at Rumble or at, you know, whatever. So I'm not really sure where Bryan goes. Bryan's over regardless, so it doesn't matter if he wins or loses. He's still going to get one of the bigger pops when he comes out every show. So I'm not really salty about Bryan losing, per se, because I think he'll be over regardless. But, this match was just okay, and it's just there to kill time. They just give Daniel Bryan something to do.
You know, I thought the Bray Wyatt character really came out. I mean, if you noticed in the ring, Bray Wyatt, even the other two guys were wrestling, but Bray Wyatt was more like trying to talk to him and trying to convince him and not really wrestling him, kind of doing, again, psychologically trying to get Bryan to join him and his ways. And it was a very odd, especially when he did, like, the ring walk, if everyone saw that. That was really strange to watch. I think the crowd thought how that was really weird how they were doing that. They said, this is creepy. That was creepy. That was what did you thought from the walk, Greg? What was it, you know? That was definitely something very odd.
Yeah, that spot went over so great. I mean, thought it was one of the first times I've ever seen Bray Wyatt come across just like some sort of sci-fi character. It looked like, just totally crazy. I thought the way he was talking to Daniel Bryan during the match and the way he held him after the finisher, I mean, it was very, very, very creepy, exactly what they were going after. And I just kind of flip back to that Hell in a Cell, or not the Hell in a Cell match, the Inferno match he had with Kane, and how terrible that was. And I'd almost given up on the Wyatts at that point. But then tonight with Daniel Bryan, finished with him and walking on his hands and feet, and the way he was talking to Daniel Bryan during the match and the way they finished the match, I was pretty engaged. I thought it was pretty cool how they did that.
Yeah, Bray Wyatt to me should be in a championship match sometime after WrestleMania, and I tell you why. Because he acts like a heel. He has the psychology of like a Jake Roberts. He talks like a Jake Roberts, and how he motions in the ring is just really awesome. And again, he's one of those guys, when I look at that guy, he creeps me out. If I got anywhere near him, I would not want to even get near him, touch him, or do anything. And that's a guy, if he won the world title, you'd be like, there's no way people are going to like him. And I really like the character. I think the character is one of the best ones they have in the WWE right now. Toph, your thoughts on the character of Bray Wyatt? Do you think he could be a main event player after WrestleMania?
Yeah, as far as the creepy factor or like the goosebump thing, Bray Wyatt, he's like, you know when you get a fresh bag of chips and then there's like that brown chip at the bottom and you're like, ew, that's what Bray Wyatt is. He creeps out people, but in a good way, you know. Yeah, that's what Bray Wyatt is. He's creepy. His character's cool. I'm not going to say he's the new Undertaker because he's not, but like in terms of like the mystique of his character, he's definitely up there. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's a little bit of Jake Roberts. There's a little bit of Raven. I see a lot of Raven, especially when the way he sits down and his promos. But, yeah, he's different. I think of James Mitchell, the manager. He's in there, too. He can definitely be a character. I don't really think he needs a belt. I mean, it would help because guys like that, usually they're over anyway. He's definitely a very interesting manipulative character. Some would even say he's in the million-dollar man territory with the promos. But there's a little bit of everything in there. You can look at Bray Wyatt and you can see all different types of characters from past and present in there, which is good, which makes him unpredictable. So I have no issue with Bray Wyatt. And, he deserves a big match of some kind at WrestleMania. Some would even say he should fight Taker. That's a little over-pushing it. But, it would be a great for the promos, right?
Yeah, I would love to see a promo battle between those two, but, yeah, I think that's a little too far-fetched idea. But, you know, I mean, I think something like a SummerSlam would be good, but not really at a WrestleMania, because I don't think he can lose at Mania. That's why I think Bray Wyatt's got to keep going. Main event time, big main event that happened. It was a World Heavyweight Championship bout, WWE Championship bout, all combined into one. The TLC match of the night, and Randy Orton defeats him cleanly. No one interfered. Nobody got involved. But Randy Orton is the man that walks out as the champion, which rightfully so, because I believe Randy Orton should be the heel champion going into WrestleMania to fight whoever wins the Royal Rumble. But let's talk about the match itself. Greg, your thoughts before we get into what we're going to go on from here. What are your thoughts on just the match itself? Let's talk a lot about the promo videos that they built up. They built up a very big promo video throughout the night, and they brought in a lot of people on Twitter talking about the seriousness of this match. What were your thoughts about going into the match from Raw and from all the tweets and then finally the match itself, right?
It's funny because, guys, I wanted to watch the match. That's why I bought the pay-per-view. Yeah, I thought they did an excellent job. The final segment on Raw this week was just really, really good. But the promo videos and the way they presented it tonight just seemed to make the match so big, almost like bigger than life, almost like a WrestleMania main event. And to me, it kind of sucks for the people who didn't buy the pay-per-view because they didn't really get a chance to get this sort of huge match, big match buzz. because they built it throughout the pay-per-view with these promo segments and these video clips as past, you know, superstars. So, you know, without even diving into the match itself, you know, just the build-up during the pay-per-view to the main event, you know, it was so much bigger than I thought that they presented it the few weeks leading up to it on Raw.
Well, remember, they only had a few weeks to build it up, too, which was part of why a lot of people didn't like that build-up. But I thought the promo videos, especially the last Raw, last two Raws, really, I thought was a great way to build it up. I thought it was great, the video showing how they both started at the same time. They even showed a little bit of Benoit. I'm sure we all caught that, right?
Yes, yeah. They showed that... The moment where Orton beat Benoit, they showed that on main event on Ion Television. I believe they showed it on SmackDown, and they showed it again tonight. It was just for a split second, but you could see Orton pinning Benoit. So, yeah.
I mean, but you had to include that. You can't just show Randy Orton holding a title winning. They showed quickly a view where you can't see Benoit, and showing that Randy Orton became the youngest world heavyweight champion of all time. Which was you have to show it. I mean, it's just a big moment for that title's history. Greg, your thoughts on the match itself? Did you like the way it went down? Did you predict Orton winning?
No, I actually did think Orton would win. But I actually was, it was back and forth on this match. I mean, I was pleased with the way that they finally delivered to the crowd with a few... Actually, a lot of tables, ladders, and chairs interaction. I thought the match was okay. I thought there was a lot of, you know, typical ladder match, where you stand at the top of the ladder and look at the crowd and kind of play on it for a few seconds and this and that. But I thought that the spot with the handcuff was cool. The John Cena kind of taking the ring apart, that was kind of cool and original. I think that they... You know, I can't really complain about it. I thought the clean finish was nice. I think it builds really, really well into what they want to do in the next few months. And, as kind of a critic of main event WWE pay-per-views, I was actually okay with the main event. I thought it lived up to the hype, as a buyer of the pay-per-view, I was okay with it.
So, your thoughts on the match itself?
Okay, here's the thing with ladder matches. There's two types of ladder matches. There's crazy, innovative spot fest matches made famous by the Hardys, the Dudleys, and Edge and Christian. And then there's the ladder matches that tell stories. One of the best examples, one of the most underrated matches of all time. I can't believe I'm saying this because there are some rare occasions where I actually defend Triple H. But The Rock versus Triple H at SummerSlam 1998 in a ladder match for the IC title, that was actually a very good ladder match, and it didn't involve any crazy spots. It was just a lot of drama. John Cena and Randy Orton, they're not going to do any crazy spots because they're two of the top guys in WWE, and so WWE can't risk them getting injured. So you're not going to get those crazy moments. But what you will get is the teasing and the storytelling and – you know, it's not what fans are used to for ladder matches, and that's really no one's fault. You know, when you have Money in the Bank and when you have TLC, all these years you've had all these crazy spot matches, and so when you have a regular old-fashioned, you know, ladder match with no crazy spots, it can come off as underwhelming. But this match was okay. It was as good as John Cena and Randy Orton could have. The handcuff part was different. It was. You don't really see that all the time. Cena taking the ring apart, that was different to escape. And, it was just okay. You know, nothing to just blew your mind, but it did its job. You know, it didn't require a pinfall or a submission, so there's no issue of Cena losing. You know, so that was how I knew Orton was going to win, because I knew that Cena didn't have to be pinned. To any gimmick match doesn't require you being pinned. Cena can lose. So, I mean, that's basically been his whole career. So this match was okay. I don't really agree with Orton being a champion, because I feel like Triple H is getting the majority of the heat anyway. But that's neither here nor there. And this match was just okay. It's just okay.
I thought the way that Randy Orton came off using the handcuffs and showing the key and throwing it out to the crowd, which I was really happy because I was afraid he was going to hold on to the key, which I hate. I totally hate when wrestlers hold on to the key to a handcuff key. If you're a true heel, you would throw that shit in the crowd. And that's exactly what Randy Orton did. And, what you know, throw – and I thought Cena, again, finding a different way out of the situation. And he does that a lot, which is great. It's just use, it's ring psychology, ladies and gentlemen. That's what they were using in this match. And Randy Orton just posing on the top of the ring, not right away taking the belts down because he already knew he won that match. He just wanted to gloat it in front of the face of John Cena, which I love. I think that makes Randy Orton look so good because the last 2 weeks he's been looking really, really bad as far as Cena putting a promo on him. And he proved, and he beat John Cena without, you know, he's just a psychologically, I thought he was just a better wrestler that night. And John Cena's going to have to be going into the Rumble, I'm sure, to get his next title match, unless they somehow, some way spin this away to go forward another way with it. But let's talk about the next 4 months. We only have 3 minutes left on the show, so Greg, try to keep it under a minute. Do we see a new championship belt? Do you think that he's going to hold the both of them? Where do you think we're going here?
I don't think we'll see a new belt. I like the belt. I think they've done a good job with The Rock coming back, establishing that is the belt that makes, you know, that sets up the signifies the WWE champion. Man, going into WrestleMania, I think it's going to be a crazy event. I have no idea. I would think that Randy Orton is going to be involved in the title change at Rumble. I don't know who he's going to lose it to. I still believe deep down that you're going to set up for a CM Punk, maybe win the Rumble in Chicago, versus Triple H at WrestleMania. That's kind of where my mark gut leads me, but, you know, I have no idea beyond that what's really going to happen.
And, Toph, your final thoughts, where do you think they're going with the WWE World Heavyweight title? Do you see a new belt coming to the picture? Who do you think the next opponent for Randy Orton is going to be at the Rumble? Any other thoughts you think of going forward as Orton as champion?
I think that both belts will stay. Just like when Jericho was undisputed champion and he carried around both belts, I think that thing will be applied here. I think Orton will carry both belts with him for a certain amount of time. How long did they carry around two belts like back in the day? I think it was like 3 months, I think. I think at least until WrestleMania, we will see both of those.
WrestleMania. WrestleMania.
Yeah, WrestleMania, right. I do not see Orton walking into WrestleMania as champion. I just don't see it. His matches really haven't been as good. His reactions have not been favorable. And the pay-per-views have not been as good. I don't see Orton being champion at WrestleMania. I see him losing that title, either at Rumble or Chamber or some fashion. That's what my gut is telling me. And unfortunately, I have a feeling that Cena's fighting Taker. I hope it doesn't happen, but that's what my gut is telling me. But I'm almost certain that Randy Orton will not be champion at WrestleMania.
Well, that remains to be seen. But, Greg, thank you for coming on to the show. We appreciate it, and we hope that
you
spread the word around about PWC Radio. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate being on the show. Have a great night.
Thank you, Greg. Telefin, again, thank you, as always, joining into the show. We appreciate you always contributing. And, of course, we got a big Tuesday night coming up.
We do, and we will be here to advertise as usual and post the show.
Yep. So for those who don't know, for the first time listening to us, we thank you. Greg, first-time caller, we appreciate you joining the show. We want anybody to join the show, but Tuesday nights at 9 p.m., we always have a show. Definitely call into that show. We're going to have a pretty big week coming up. We're going to see what happens on Raw tomorrow night. We'll give our thoughts. We thank you for joining us tonight here at Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, PWP Radio, hashtag. Definitely join us every Tuesday night. We are on at 9 o'clock. Toph, myself, we are on with our boss, Jay, Jersey Strong Jay, and we're always happy to do these shows. So please check us out at youtube.com/PWP, which is PWP Powerhouse TV. Join us there. You can get all these episodes on iTunes. You can get all these episodes on Blog Talk Radio. We're also you can also buy stuff at our Amazon store to kick back a little bit of the contribution to our store. Plus, we have our ProWrestlingTees.com. You can check us out there. Thank you very much, everybody. Enjoy the show. I'm not going to keep it real, but my name is TLD, and I'm signing off.